Mark needed some dough, threw it into the oven, then sold the bread to neighbors who were hungry for something real to eat. But when Mark's bread became famous, the food safety police stepped in and confiscated the lot, which leads us to ask, which is most important, food safety or food sovereignty?
Welcome to the award-winning Food Chain Show with your host, Michael Olson. Now, get ready for an hour of What's Eating What Radio.
Hello out there. You are tuned into the 957th edition of the Food Chain Radio program right here on the GCN Radio Network. Or hey, perhaps you're among our friends way down there in Fremantle who are tuned in as we stream along on the Food Chain page at metrofarm.com. Well, whoever you are and wherever you are, welcome aboard. I am Michael Olson, your host for this hour of What's Eating What Radio, with engineer Aaron Shore on the boards. Aaron.
Yes.
What do you think is most important, food safety or food sovereignty?
I'd say safety.
Okay, fair enough. Give this a listen then. Folks need some water, salt, yeast, and flour together, and what do you get? Why, you get the food safety police. At least, that was what Mark Stambler got when the homemade breads he baked in his backyard wood-fired oven became famous throughout Los Angeles County. For decades, Mark's bread baking was a hobby that won him blue ribbons at the Los Angeles County Fair and the California State Fair. Then he decided to take the leap from avocation to vocation and began selling breads at select retail locations. Word of Stambler's bread spread from hungry mouth to hungry mouth, and in 2011, the Los Angeles Times featured the breads in a full-page article. Stambler's fame, however, was short-lived, as the very next day the food safety police showed up to shut him down. Stambler the baker became Stambler the food sovereignty activist, and with the help of some friends, began promoting the California Homemade Food Act, which was recently passed into law. And Mark Stambler became the first person in Los Angeles County to sell homemade breads legally. Mark Stambler's fight for the right to sell homemade foods leads us to ask, which is most important, food safety or food sovereignty? Here to help us bake up an answer, we have the baker-in-chief of Pagnoli Bread, Mark Stambler. Mark, welcome to the Food Chain.
Hi. Pleasure to be here.
Did I get the name of your bread right?
It's Pagnoli Boulanger. That's right.
Pagnoli Boulanger. That would be French, right?
Yes, indeed. I bake very traditional French breads, and I named my company in honor of the French writer and director, Marcel Pagnol, who wrote about life in French country villages in the first half of the 20th century.
Mm-hmm. Well, I guess my first question, which will probably seem crazy to you, but probably not so crazy to most of the people out there in the world right now, is why do bakers bake early in the morning?
Because everybody wants fresh bread, so you have to get up and bake the bread. And I've been up since 2 this morning baking, and I just finished delivering loaves to some of my customers, and I'll deliver the rest after this interview. And everybody likes warm bread. It smells great. Comes right out of the oven.
So that's really the tradition, right, is freshness. But, you know, today, yeah. Mark, when most of us go into the supermarket, the bread's not so fresh, are they?
No. I mean, generally the breads are made in huge factory-like settings and are shipped in plastic bags even around the country now. They have breads that are just partially baked, and you're supposed to either bake them, finish baking them at home or in the store in which you buy them. It's very different than the traditional model that I'm basing my business on.
Well, what is traditional French bread?
That's hard to answer because there was certainly a great range of traditional breads. Now, the way I define it is basically anything that's not a baguette, because most people consider baguettes to be the quintessential traditional, I suppose, French bread, but really it's a fairly recent invention, and it's not even particularly French. It was introduced to Paris by the Viennese and became a big hit with the Parisians and sort of filtered out from there into the countryside.
When I hear baguette, I think of just a long, skinny loaf of bread that you kind of just break it off, right? Or what is it?
Yeah, exactly. That was the innovation. Before that, French breads were sort of hefty, hearty, round loaves and shorter, thicker loaves. They weren't long and skinny. And the other thing about many baguettes is that they're made with essentially white flour. It's not entirely white, but right. It's whiter than most of the bread that was made out in the countryside for centuries before then.
And that's the kind that you are talking about, is the kind, the traditional kind that was made out in the country. And when you say hefty and hearty, I'm not thinking Wonder Bread.
No, far from it. Well, bread up until about 100, 125, 30 years ago was made completely from whole grain. I mean, the millers really didn't have a large-scale capacity to separate the white part of the flour out from the nutritious part. So basically, they just mix. You got everything that came out of the grain went into the bread.
So it was kind of like whole flour or whole grain bread.
Oh, yeah,
so.
It was all whole grain flour, mm-hmm. Yes.
Now, what does your baking consist of? What are the ingredients that you use?
I've basically been winnowing it down as much as I possibly can. I use organic grain, water, salt. That's it. My rye bread has organic caraway seeds in it, but mm-hmm. That's it. Because
what about yeast?
The yeast is wild yeast, and that just comes from my starter. That is essentially basically grain and water mixed together. Well, grain that's been milled into flour, of course. And distilled water that I just let sit out, and basically yeast starts growing on it. And I don't add yeast to it. Yeast is everywhere.
Right. If it doesn't make bread, it'll make wine, right?
Or actually, more to the point, it makes beer.
Beer, yeah.
Because baker's yeast is actually also a very recent invention. I mean, it's been around for not much more than a century as well. It's interesting that the baguette and baker's yeast came around at about the same time. The baker's yeast actually is distiller's yeast. The Fleischmann Yeast Company in Chicago developed this super fast-acting yeast that the distillers needed. Because I know most people may not know this, that the distillation process is actually, to make alcohol, is actually the second part of a longer process for making alcohol. You have to start by brewing a mash, which is essentially there was a distiller was talking about it, and she said it was just... You start off with a really mushy, bad dough, and it's just grain and water. You just let it ferment for a long time, and you throw some yeast in there, and that's brewer's yeast, and that creates this mash that then gets distilled into grain alcohol.
Wow.
So the distillers wanted a yeast that would actually, the big distilleries wanted yeast that would work much faster than brewer's yeast, than traditional brewer's yeast, which was natural yeast. The reason I bring this up is that the brewers then would often, or bakers, bread bakers, would often work with brewers to get their yeast and use it and just keep it going if they're over and over again, because that's how they did it. They would just take, a little bit of the dough that they were working with and save that out as the leavening for their next batch of bread. And they would work, sometimes they would work with the brewers to get some of their yeast.
Wow. But, so for millenniums, we survived, we sedentary people at least, survived with beer and bread.
Yeah, no, they've been, go back for a very, very long time. And there's some interesting discussion going on right now.
Well, hold that discussion. We have to take a quick break. Mark okay. Stambler. Folks, this is the Food Chain Radio Program. Michael Olson here with Mark Stambler. Questions we're working with today. Why did Mark Stambler's homemade breads become targeted by the food safety police? How did Stambler and friends manage to win for Californians the right to sell homemade foods? And which is most important, food safety or food sovereignty? And by sovereignty, I mean, of course, the right for us to take care of ourselves, to feed ourselves. Phone numbers today, 800-624-2665, 831-4790, on the forums at metrofarm.com. Join us and tell us which is most important, food safety or food sovereignty. Right back with Mart Stambler.
Get this. You can earn a 5-, 6-, or 7-figure income by farming a small parcel of land in or near the city.
You can be old or young.
Rich or poor.
Married or single.
You can own land outright.
Or lease it year to year.
You can grow small fruits on prairie bench lands.
Houseplants in coastal valleys.
Flowers on steep wooded hillsides.
Vegetables in the city green belts.
And ornamentals in neighborhoods of fancy homes.
Get all the help you need to get growing at MetroFarm.com.
Get the complete guide to growing high-value specialty crops for the city at MetroFarm.com.
Get experts to look at your land and assess which crops to grow at MetroFarm.com.
Get advice on how to plan and develop your project at MetroFarm.com.
And get news about the business of farming for the city.
Yes, you can earn a 5-, 6-, or even a 7-figure income by farming high-value specialty crops on a small parcel of land in or near the city.
Grow for the money today at MetroFarm.com. That's MetroFarm.com.
Well, you've probably heard this from Benjamin Franklin, who said, "They who can give up essential liberty to obtain a little temporary safety deserve neither liberty nor safety." Well, folks, the food safety police looked at Mark Stambler's homemade bread and deemed it to be not safe. And so they came and visited and took away his breads and refused to allow him to sell breads anymore. And so Mark wandered 18 months in the food safety perdition, and but he overcame that. And that's the story we're talking about today. A guy who won blue ribbons with his homemade breads at the Los Angeles County Fair, at the California State Fair, and I bet in the hearts of neighbors too, right, Mark?
Yes, absolutely.
And so tell us how you made the transition from being, you know, an avid backyard hobbyist bread baker to being I'm going into business.
Well, I'm not sure I really thought of it as going into business. I just thought, well, you know, I've been baking bread on and off for 30 years now, just as you said, as an avocation, as a sideline, and I thought, well, let's see. Maybe there'll be a market out there for my bread. Let me just see if anybody would be willing to buy it. So I just went to a couple of local stores. I mean, literally, one was within walking distance of my house. Another one was a short drive away. And said, look, I bake some bread at home.
Here, I got blue ribbons for it, right?
Yeah, exactly. So I just brought them the bread to the owners of the stores, and I said, here, just try this. Let me know. Would you be interested in carrying it? And there are a couple of cheese stores, and they both said, oh, wow, this is fantastic bread. Sure, we'd love to carry it. And I said, I don't have any permits or anything. We'll just sort of keep it on the down low. And one of them said, no, sorry, I can't. You don't have any permits. I can't carry it. But the other guy said, permits, sure, let's give it a try, no problem. So I said, okay. And so for, I don't know, months, if not a couple of years, I was just bringing every Saturday morning, I'd bring a bunch of bread over there, and it started getting a following. I started, people started tracking me down because they'd had this bread, and there was this mysterious guy in the neighborhood who was baking bread, and nobody's seen anything like this before. So
wait a minute. Now, what do you mean by nobody has seen stuff like this before? Because there's bread everywhere.
Well, it's just a different kind of bread. First, it's homemade, and it looks different, and it smells different, and
probably a little fresh too, right?
Yeah, it's very fresh. I mean, I would just drive it over there that morning and drop it off, and people, well, they started lining up for it, and they were reserving loaves, and people were upset that the loaves were all reserved when they'd come there and stuff, and so it started taking off. Let me just say this, and the blogosphere got hold of it too. There's a this is all here in Los Angeles. There's quite a food community down here. And it communicates via blog.
Mm-hmm.
And
there's something to eat over on North 15th Street, right?
Yeah, exactly. Now check this out, and there's always photographs and stuff.
Right,
so. It started percolating that there's this guy who's like selling this, baking this really wonderful traditional bread. And it's just sold at a couple of stores over on what we call the east side of Los Angeles, but other people may consider it the west side, but that's neither here nor there. And it started getting a reputation, and then finally the Los Angeles Times heard about it and said, because not now, but back then, and years ago in 2011, there used to be a separate food section of the LA Times came out on Thursdays. And so one of the writers for the food section got in touch with me and said, hey, we'd like to do a story about you on your bread. And I said,
I don't have any permits.
What's that?
I don't have any permits.
Yeah, well, they knew about that part of it. And I said, all right, well, look, I mean, a full-page, who am I kidding? A full-page article about me and my bread in the L.A. Times? opportunity doesn't come along very often. That's on the one hand. But on the other hand, it could get me in some trouble. And I thought to myself, well, look, I don't really mind that much. If it gets me in trouble, fine, then I just stop baking bread or whatever, and don't worry about it. But I don't really want to get the shop owners in trouble, because they were nice enough to carry my bread. So I talked to the woman who was writing the article, and I said, just don't let people know where to buy my bread. Just keep it kind of mysterious.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah, so she said, well, let me talk to my editor about this. So they just talked to her editor, and the editor said, no, if we can't, we have this duty to our readers. We have to let them know where to buy your bread, or we can't run the story. Oh, boy. So there's this, and I said, I don't really know what to do. So she said, look, I talked to my editor about this, and he said it would be fine. Nothing's going to happen. Everything will be just fine. So just let us run the article with where to buy your bread. And I said, well, couldn't hurt, I guess. It came out on a Thursday, and the next day, Friday morning, which is when I sell my bread over at the stores, they had two inspectors right there. But actually, they showed up kind of a little bit later in the morning. And my bread had already sold out. I mean, there were people waiting for the shop to open, and they just bought everything right away. So the inspectors came in, and, they couldn't really deny anything, because they posted the article about from the L.A. Times in the shop window. So they kind of had to admit that, his bread is normally sold here, but it's not here right now because it was sold out. I mean, they got there too late. So the inspectors sort of looked around a bit and basically said, this cheese has got to go. Because the guy at the cheese store, he liked to ripen his cheeses for his customers. So, he got pretty upset, as you can imagine. And then the health department just tried to did what they could to make his life as difficult as possible. But he's kind of a gruff guy from Boston, and he didn't suffer fools gladly or suffer health departments gladly. So he put up a fight on his end, And but it was a difficult year and a half for him as well. But he's doing all right at this point. But that's tangential. So they went to the other store and they told them they couldn't sell my bread anymore, and they made them throw out some of their the food they felt wasn't being stored properly as well. Mm-hmm. And you know,
broke some knuckles, as it were.
Pardon me?
Broke some knuckles, as it were.
Yeah, a little bit. I mean,
pushed him around.
Right, but the guy at the cheese store, he fought back. He went back. He went to the health department and gave him a piece of his mind. And they went back and forth on this for about a year. But that's, as I say, that's another story. And that's all.
What did they do to you, Mark?
But then what happened is, like, about a week and a half after that happened, I was actually, during that time, I was trying to figure out a way where I could legitimately sell my bread without, you know, going and starting a commercial kitchen somewhere. And I was talking to the health department about this, and I was meeting with the health department about this to try to figure out exactly what I need to do in order to sell my bread legitimately. When I had an early morning meeting at the health department, and I came home, and my wife said, the health department was here at our house. And I said, oh, come on, stop joking. And she said, no, they showed up at the front door. I was getting ready to go to work, and there was a knock at the door, and there's this woman, and she said she's from the health department. And I said, What does she want?
Okay, you got to hold it. We got to take a quick break. This is the Food Chain. Come right back, because we're going to get busted by the food safety police. Do stay tuned. And the knock on the door. And you open the door, and who's standing there? It's the food safety police. Your crime? Baking bread out in the backyard. And selling it to the neighborhood grocer who sells it to all of your neighbors who are hungry for it because it's something real in a world where there is not very much real to eat anymore. And so they hunger for it and they line up for it. And hey, did you hear about the guy who's baking bread in his backyard? It's so good, but you can only get it at these two stores. Oh my goodness, that must have been fun.
It was. I think 12 hours of fame there, and then that was it. It was shut down. And the health department sent somebody over to inspect my kitchen and backyard to make sure that no more bread baking was taking place. And as I say, I wasn't there. My wife was, and I was shocked. I mean, this really. Was a wake-up call to me. It meant that I needed to do something to legalize this. I just couldn't imagine that something as innocuous as selling homemade bread
and so much fun
against the law. Yeah, it is fun. It's exciting. So I decided to do, I guess, what any reasonable person would do in my situation. Starting a long, what would probably be a long process. I Googled it to see if it was legal to sell homemade food anywhere in the United States. And it turns out that there were 18 states where it was perfectly legal to do what I had been doing in California and got busted for. So,
why is it illegal for you to sell homemade bread in California? I mean, what was the why was it illegal in the first place?
Well, up until last year, it was illegal to sell homemade food in California. I mean, to the extent where technically bake sales were illegal. Even if you were selling it to benefit your local, you know, church or school, the health department had the right to shut it down. Now, normally they didn't do that because they were busy doing other things. But
do you think, Mark, that that's how Girl Scout cookies became the Girl Scout cookies of today, as opposed to homemade Girl Scout cookies? I mean,
just thinking about it.
Well, I remember that Girl Scout cookies is a national effort, and it's hard to imagine that at any point in the past this was a local effort to support Girl Scouts.
Okay.
I mean, it might have been, but I think we're talking two different ways of approaching food sales here.
Fair enough.
I did find a group of the Sustainable Economies Law Center up in Oakland that had been working on this issue of legalizing the sale of homemade food in California. And what happened is I got in touch with them, and even though they are a group of lawyers, they had no experience, as did I, in writing legislation. We both agreed that we wanted to get a law passed, but we had no idea how to go about doing it. So basically what we did at that point was look at what was going on in other states that where it was legal to sell homemade food and basically try to get hold of their laws and copy them. That's how, you know, basic and rudimentary our approach was.
Kind of like baking bread, right?
Yeah.
You need some sentences together and away you go.
Exactly. But luckily, I've been getting some coverage about this in the newspaper and over the internet about this, about being shut down. And I was sitting in my word processor one morning trying to figure out how to write a state law when the phone rang. And it was my assemblyman. And he introduced himself, Mike Gatto, and I he told me he had heard about the difficulties I was having, and he asked me if there was anything he could do to help. And I said, you know, funny you should ask. I need to write a bill and get it passed. And he said, no problem, let's do it. And he introduced me to a couple of people on his staff and assigned them to the project. And I and the Sustainable Economies Law Center, the lawyers up there, and the staffers at Mike Gatto's office all worked together for the next year and a half to sort of figure out how the best way to write legislation and try to get it passed, not just past the legislature, which was had its own set of challenges, but also to deal with the health departments in 58 different counties in California, and just as importantly, the food industry, the big grocery stores, they were not too happy about this either, and they basically, through some of their organizations, were trying to basically keep this as limited as possible. So. We did.
No, wait a minute. Mark, we just have to ask why the grocers would be opposed to people selling each other their homemade foods.
Well, I think that they basically, it was more competition within their markets, and they basically told us that it was a food safety issue. But I think they were just using that as an excuse to try to, keep different kinds of bread out of the market. I mean, it's kind of absurd, really, when you think of how limited the production capacity is of people who are making food at home. But, you know, there you have it. I guess it's kind of a knee-jerk reaction on the part of large grocers that they want to keep as much of the market to themselves as possible, which I certainly understand. It was a matter of us navigating through all these competing interests.
So you had three competing interests, as I understand it. You had, you know, the legislature itself. You have to work a bill through the legislature, and who knows what kind of, trap doors you fall through there. Had the food safety people from all of the counties.
Yeah.
Oh, my goodness.
Different.
So you're stepping on everybody's turf in every county in California.
Right. Absolutely.
And then you had all the grocers who were looking at you and going, wait a minute, you want to sell bread yourself? And what about our bread? So
yeah.
you had, who was your friend? Did you have any friends?
Well, actually, there were a number of legislators who thought this was an excellent idea, and they were all in favor of it. I mean, I want to send a shout out right now to Mike Gatto, my assemblyman, who worked very, very hard on to get this passed, and much to my surprise, though maybe it shouldn't be. One of the biggest advocates in favor of this was indeed the head of the health department here in Los Angeles County. Angelo Bellomo was a leading advocate for this with his counterparts in other counties around the state.
So we're going to take a quick break, but when we come back, I'm going to walk you through these three obstacles, and it sounds like you found some friends, and it sounded like you needed some friends to get this job done, folks. Mark Stambler made it possible for the people of California to sell food to each other. Oh, my goodness. This is the Food Chain Radio program right back. Which is most important, food safety or food sovereignty? Well, imagine baking up some bread in your wood-fired oven out in the backyard and then having all the neighbors come by and say, gosh, I want some of that too. And so you start handing it out to the neighbors, and pretty soon you're selling it to the neighborhood stores, and then the food safety police show up and say, you can't do that, and so you can't bake bread anymore, and so you're 18 months in food safety perdition, not allowed to bake your own bread. So you decide to fight. And what do you fight up? What do you go up against? You go up against the legislature of the great state of California. You go up against the grocers of the great state of California. And you go up against all of the food safety bureaucrats in all of the counties of the great state of California. It's you against the whole world. But you did find some friends, Mark Stambler.
I did, and unlikely places. I mean, it's not exactly a Mark versus Goliath story. There are allies all along the way. I mean, not only in the food communities around California, which were very, very helpful, but also in key parts of the legislature and key parts of the health departments around the state. And one ally who was very influential, as I was starting to say earlier, was Angelo Bellomo, who was the director of the Department of Environmental Health for Los Angeles County.
Why did he stand up for you?
Because he believed in it. He thought that we had spoken about this at great length, phone conversations over weeks, and I pointed out to him that there were 18, 19 states around the union that were doing just this, and he thought it would be a good idea for Los Angeles County and for California to have a law like this in place. And so he said that he was willing to speak up for it. Now, the way that it worked with the directors of Department of Environmental Health, they have conference calls every month where all 58 of them, or as many of them as can, join in the conversation. They don't all go to Sacramento. They just call in and talk to each other. And Angelo was willing and did actually talk in favor of this the bill, AB 1616, during these calls. And I was very impressed. I mean, he was willing to just say, I think this is time for California to have a law like this. It's just absurd for, you know, people who are making, now this is the critical point, people who are making not potentially hazardous food at home should be allowed to do so and sell it.
How did you overcome the grocer's objections to, hey, you know, you can't possibly be safe, but what they're really saying is don't compete with us?
Yeah, we never did, and it turns out that it didn't matter that much. Because I think the people we had to really convince this was okay were the legislators. They're the ones who were going to vote on the legislation. And, of course, the grocers could say no, and people would kind of expect that. But what was really important was what were the health directors going to do? And so we had to get the health directors to the point where at least they wouldn't object to it. If they lodged an objection to it, then legislators weren't going to vote for it. So we were just hoping that we could either get them to support it, which would be great, or at least take no stance on it. And that's actually what happened. The grocers, they said, no, we don't like it. Fine. The health directors, they were swayed, but to the point where they voted to not take the stance on it.
So then there really wasn't anybody to object. If the health people didn't object, then what grounds could the grocers take other than the fact that
that was part of it, right? But the other part of it was that we did have to go and talk to a lot of legislators, both up in Sacramento and out in their field offices, and I spent months doing that. And what I found is that either the legislators, the assemblymen, state senators, or people on their staff, without exception, they knew someone who was making, like, really good something or other in the kitchen, you know, salad dressing or something like that, and they always thought they should be able to sell it, but never could. So this actually had a much wider constituency than I imagined. And
just people who happen to eat food, right?
Well, yeah, exactly. And what I, you know, when I first started this whole process, it was a personal crusade. I mean, my goodness, how could they come to my house and do this? I'll show them. But as I spent over a year trying to write and pass this legislation, I started hearing from people all over the state. And, well, I mean, just not to put too fine a point on it, it was more women than men. And these were usually young moms who wanted to make a few extra dollars selling, well, cakes and cookies that they had made. And they didn't have the capacity to do it at home because it was illegal, so they had to actually go out and use rent time in commercial kitchens in the middle of the night, because that's when the bakers weren't they were usually catering kitchens. Mm-hmm. The caterers weren't using it in the middle of the night, so they had to use it in the middle of the night. They had to hire babysitters to stay home in their house and look after the kids while they were out baking in these, and it was ridiculous.
And so you took it upon yourself to make a big change, and you did. When we get back, I'd like to ask you the big question, Mark Stambler, which is most important to us, food safety or food sovereignty? This is the Food Chain Radio Program, Michael Lose with Mark Stambler and you, 800-624-2665, 831-479-1080, right back. Well, folks, Benjamin Franklin said it, I guess. They who can give up essential liberty to obtain a little temporary safety deserve neither liberty nor safety. It seems to me as though we here in the United States are really going great guns for the food safety part. We've passed the Food Safety Modernization Act of 2010. We've hired Monsanto's Michael Taylor to run the Food Safety Division of the United States Food and Drug Administration. And so it seems as though we're bound for food safety. But what is it that we'll lose when our food becomes perfectly safe? What do you think we're going to get to eat, Mark Stambler, when our food becomes perfectly safe to eat?
Well, I think we actually have that here in California right now, even with the California Homemade Food Act. And this is the next big challenge, because though the law went into effect January 1st, 2013, there's a very limited number of foods that are allowed to be sold, homemade foods that are allowed to be sold. And these are the not potentially hazardous foods. And obviously bread is right there at the top of the list, but following close at hand are a list of foods that are not particularly healthy, and that has to do with cakes and candies and cookies and things like that. That it's fine as far as they go, but
Not much nutrition there, right?
No, not much nutritional value. In fact, when we first started the this whole effort, I wrote this long preamble to the legislation that talked about, you know, community-based food security and how we're going to really democratize the whole process of creating food that we can sell within our communities. But when we saw the list of foods that the health directors would only allow us to make at home and sell, we had to take all that out because the foods are not particularly nutritious and not particularly healthy, except of course for bread. What we insisted upon in the legislation is that there be some mechanism where we could add to that list of not potentially hazardous foods that so, then we would be allowed to make at home and sell.
So the fight goes on. I have a good friend out in the Shenandoah River Valley, Joel Salatin, his name. He's got an outfit.
Oh, yeah.
He has a place called Polyface Farms, and he made probably what is probably one of the most frightening suggestions on earth to food safety people. His suggestion was that people should be able to sell directly to their customers without any government supervision whatsoever.
Yeah.
And his suggestion was that why have government stand between a person who made something and the direct consumer of his food, suggesting, of course, that the farther you go from the source of your food, the more protection you need. But if you're
that's actually how it works here in California now. We have two different classes of cottage food operators. If you sell directly to your consumer, if you can look them in the eye as you sell them your bread or whatever it is that you're selling them, then you don't need any inspection from the health department.
Food with its farmer's face on it.
Yep, exactly.
Hey, Mark Stambler, I'm out of time, but what fun. Okay. I really enjoyed this conversation with you. But I just want a special thanks to you for going through that struggle. For all of us who like to eat real food, thank you.
You've been listening to the award-winning Food Chain Show with Michael Olson. If your friends missed the show today, tell them to log on to the radio page at www.metrofarm.com for a listen. Now go out and find some food with a farmer's face on it and live.